You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Well, Mike Brennan, at least. Matt is doing his romantic thing today. He's on his anniversary cruise with his wife up in Traverse City. So you have me and, of course, lots of other folks, including Sabrina Collins, the executive director of the Marburger STEM Center at Lawrence Technological University, who's on the phone with us now. How are you doing, Sabrina?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking. So why don't we start off with, this may be the first time that some folks have ever heard of the Marburger STEM Center. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
So basically, the Marburger STEM Center is, you can think of it as LTU's Marburger STEM Center. You can think of it as the umbrella or the clearinghouse of all of the STEM and design initiatives that we have taking place on campus. So those include our high school summer camps. That also includes RoboFest, which some of your listeners may be familiar with, which focuses on teaching young people how to program autonomous robots. The World Championships of RoboFest will be May 18th through the 19th. We have professional development workshops for K-12 teachers and partnerships with the Detroit Public Schools and the Southfield Public Schools. So that kind of gives you kind of an overview of what the STEM Center is about. And we officially had our grand opening in September of 2016.
Ah, okay. And again, for those who, I'm assuming most anybody that listened to this podcast would know what STEM means, but why don't you define it for those who don't know?
Sure. So STEM represents science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Okay, and sometimes architecture, too, since that's what you guys do there as well, right? Or at least the arts.
Right, and so, which is why I'm saying STEM and design. So that design piece falls under architecture and art.
Okay. Now, you have, I know you have, because we talk about it every year, a bunch of whole really cool STEM Center summer camps coming up. I just don't know when they start. That's got to be just around the corner, right?
Absolutely. So they actually begin the last week in June, so June 25th through the 29th, and they go until July 23rd through the 27th, 2018. So for 4 weeks, we have nearly 30 summer camps for high school students, and these are specifically for 10th graders and 12th graders, and they're taught by our faculty. And so we're our very popular summer camps, which are, you know, have filled up. For example, automotive engineering is closed, biomedical engineering is closed, and biotechnology is closed. But we have several other camps that still have open slots, such as business and entrepreneurship, game art, molecules and medicine, and graphic design.
Wow. And so if somebody, and this is open to both high school girls and boys, right? Not just girls?
Exactly. So boys and girls.
Okay. And then so if they want to sign up, where do they do that? How do they, what website do they surf on over to?
They can come to www.ltu.edu, search for the Marburger STEM Center, and the link for the high school summer camps will pop up.
And then I think there's a charge, right? It's not real expensive, but there is a charge, right?
There is a fee, so we do have day or you can have the day experience or the residential experience where the students actually live on campus. And so the camps cost anywhere from $850 to $950 per week, but we do offer scholarships if parents are interested in those kinds of things.
Okay, and you also have professional development workshops for K through 12 teachers. Is that in the summer as well?
That is actually, yes. So that's actually throughout the academic year. And our most recent K-12 workshop was led by Dr. Andy Gearhart, focusing on project-based learning. And we actually had about 11 teachers attend that. And six of them actually came from West Bloomfield High School, which was kind of cool. So they're looking to do some different things in the classrooms with students. But we have three more coming up, one at the end of May, focusing on hands-on science, introduction to forensic science, learning by doing, using maker projects to spark interest in STEM, and also a week-long experience focused on forensic science, a deeper dive there.
Oh, interesting. And you have a partnership with Detroit Public Schools and Southfield Public Schools. What's that all about?
Yeah, so basically, back in 2015, actually before I started, LTU and the Detroit Public Schools actually established an innovative partnership entitled the Blue Devil Scholars Program, and basically to enhance the STEM and design curriculum in K-12 institutions. So basically, we're focusing on two schools, so Samson Weber Leadership Academy, which is a kindergarten through eighth grade school, and Northwestern Collegiate Prep. And when the students graduate from high school, they'll leave with two things, a high school diploma and a certificate representing 12 to 15 college credit hours that they could use at Lawrence Tech and earn a degree, and they get scholarship support. And last, in December of last year, we also established a new partnership with Southfield Public Schools, which will be, it'll be some similarities to DPS, but slightly different. And so what's unique about both of those programs, they offer really a unique way to really foster that development of STEM talent right here in Southeast Michigan.
Oh, interesting. And Science and Technology Showcase, what's happening with that?
So basically, that's our signature program, a signature event of the STEM Center. So basically, it's a collaboration with Medical Main Street in Oakland County and also LTU's Career Services to support focusing on our science majors and our biomedical engineering majors. And so we had our second annual showcase actually last month. And basically, we had about 100 people that RSVP'd. We had a fantastic employer panel. Students actually presented posters, and it was a wonderful opportunity for students really to showcase their knowledge base and interact with potential employers in their field. And so we're looking forward to the 2019 showcase, which will be in April.
Next April of 2019, obviously. Okay. So what else
yes,
is going on? Let's talk a little bit more about those summer camps. Now, that's kind of, since it's just percolating here around the corner, what is the most, obviously, some of the ones you said are full, probably the most popular, right?
Right. So automotive design, biotechnology, those are pretty much, yeah, automotive design, biomedical engineering camp, and biotechnology. Those are our most popular.
And what exactly, I mean, automotive design sounds pretty self-explanatory, but the other ones, what exactly do they do?
Well, with biomedical engineering, those focus on, for example, focusing on things such as like hip replacements and those kinds of things, developing things really. So it's really a nice combination of health and engineering, if you will. Biotechnology, focusing on, I would say, drug delivery, nanotechnology, those kinds of things, really giving students some hands-on experiences, you know, with STEM.
Okay. And then I'm told, normally Matt would be here to help me out with this interview, but he's on vacation this week. Anyway, he tells me that these summer camps are partly also a recruiting tool for LTU, right? You expose these kids to LTU, and particularly the ones that stay there for the whole week, and they get the whole college experience. And is that right? Is that part of what's going
on? That's absolutely correct, Mike. And in fact, these summer camps, they're an important feeder for Lawrence Tech. Nearly 50% of students that participate in these summer camps actually enroll here. So, you know, that's very important. So these kids are actually getting a great experience and actually being able to work directly with our faculty and also working with some of our students, because our graduate students, some of them also help with these summer camps, you know, and young people, they want to talk to other young people, right? They don't want to talk to old folks. So having our LTU students actually talk to them about why LTU is the right place for them, I think is really critical for the recruiting process.
Okay. Then also, let's talk a little bit more about the STEM Center. Now, I know you had a big endowment. Was it Steve Ballmer who came up with the money? Is that what I heard?
That is absolutely correct. So years ago, Steve Ballmer, he actually, when he was a teenager, actually took some dual enrollment math courses here on campus. And at the time, our fourth president, Dr. Richard Marburger, he was president at the time, allowed Steve to come on campus, Mr. Ballmer to come on campus and actually participate in these dual enrollment courses. And Mr. Ballmer, he never forgot that. And so he actually donated the $20 million that actually established this wonderful facility. And we are truly grateful to Mr. Ballmer and his family for that generous gift.
Yeah, I know he's a Detroit native, or not Detroit, but at least the metro area. I can't remember which city it was that he grew up in. But he went to Cranbrook, if I believe. Didn't he go to Cranbrook, I think?
I believe he did go to Cranbrook.
Yeah.
I believe you're correct about that. Yes. Yes, so we're very thankful about that, and I can tell you that Dr. Marburger is pleased every day to have a STEM Center named in his honor.
Yeah. How many students do you have at the STEM Center, I mean, during the normal academic year?
Well, you know, it varies. I can tell you that, for example, with our summer camps, we have about 400 students on campus, you know, in a given summer, just mm-hmm. high school students.
Sure.
But because we have so many, we have lab spaces and things like that housed in the STEM Center. So you have classes always taking place in the STEM Center as well. So summer is 400, but during the academic year, it varies, you know, depending on the classes that are actually held here. So we have cell biology, you have chemistry, geology, biomedical engineering, robotics, you name it. Everything is right here in the STEM Center.
Ah. And again, I know you have partnerships with Detroit Public Schools and Southfield, but are you looking to establish more partnerships with more area high schools?
In the future, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I had mentioned the West Bloomfield, mm-hmm. you know, West Bloomfield High School. That's a very important partnership for us. And to have several teachers actually participate in our professional development workshops is, you know, was absolutely awesome. And one other point that I would like to mention, so we did have a recent meeting with the new DPS superintendent, Dr. Vitti. So myself, Dr. Modgill, our president, our provost, Dr. Vaz, and several others had a chance to talk about our partnership because we are so committed to the city of Detroit.
All right. We got about a minute left. Give us just a little bit, one more time here to plug what's going on here at the STEM Center and how people can reach out to you. How can they reach out to you? Would it be better to email you or what?
They can email me at scollins@ltu.edu. They can also visit us at www.ltu.edu and search for the Marburger STEM Center.
Okay, that's Sabrina Collins, Executive Director of the Marburger, I can still do it, STEM Center at Lawrence Tech. And we'll be right back. You've been listening to M Squared TechCast on the Podcast Detroit Network.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Mike Brennan. We're back with M Squared TechCast. Matt is out on vacation. He's on his Well, his anniversary, yes.
Oh, honeymoon.
I was going to say honeymoon. Yes, his 35-year honeymoon continues, or whatever number it is. I don't know. But he's up in Traverse City because that's where he got married, by gum. And he's a, he's really a big softy on the inside. So he may be listening. I hope so, so I can make fun of him, but he's probably not. Anyway, we have on the phone Richard Steenen, founder of IT Harvest, and he's one of our regulars who likes to scare the pants off us about what's going on with all these cyber attacks and bad people out there trying to get into our networks. So how you doing today, Richard?
Hey, Mike, I'm doing great.
Okay. So we got
enjoying spring for once.
Yes, isn't that nice? I'm amazed how it just like a light switch. It went from really cold and dreary to poof. It was summer, no spring. So.
Why we live here.
That's it. Yeah, we love it, the four seasons. So you're going to be talking about, and I've read a little bit about this, but I got to admit I'm not as up to speed as I probably should be, and everyone keeps warning me this is a big deal. The European Union has this general data protection regulation that's going into effect on May 25th. Why don't you kind of explain what that's all about and what might happen?
Yeah, and, you know, before your listeners' eyes glaze over because it's a regulation, you should think about the excitement we experienced during Y2K when we saw this, you know, tsunami approaching of all this equipment that we didn't know if it could accommodate the switch over in the calendar, and everybody got excited. And the most excitement was, you know, in the 4 weeks before the year 2000. And it's felt like that over the last 2 years, as first GDPR was, you know, officially adopted as a new regulation, and then they set the date for being enacted and enforced to this May 25th. So a lot of organizations have been looking at their privacy controls that they have in place. And we've seen a lot of that, you know, recently, especially with, you know, the massive data breach at Yahoo, you know, over a billion identities lost, and all the stuff that's going on with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica in the UK. And, we, you know, we realize that the EU takes privacy very, very seriously. And they've objected over the years to the way that the Googles, Yahoos, Apples, Facebooks of the world tend to treat data like it belongs to them and not to the individual users. So that's us.
Yes.
So they enacted this data privacy regulation, which, you know, carries over a lot of the things that the UK's data privacy regulation had, and France and Germany, but it codifies it for every country in the EU. And the reason it's important to start worrying about it, if you're any sort of business that's got a website, collect email addresses for your newsletter, you know, the M2 podcast probably has something like that. You've got to worry about the fact that you probably have people who are resident in a European country who are on those lists. That automatically puts you under the domain of this regulation.
Really?
And if you want to continue to do business in the EU, you have to comply with this regulation that's printed out, covers almost, you know, 400 pages of, you know, book size pages.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely complicated. And we would call it draconian here in the US. Mm-hmm. Some of the, I guess to start with, the measure that gets quoted the most often is if you are not in compliance, and this isn't for, you know, if you've got a data breach and you had bad security. This is if you're not in compliance with these 400 pages, you are subject to a fine that could be as high as 20 million euros, which would put a lot of companies out of business. Or in the case of big companies where 20 million euros doesn't mean much to them, 4% of their annual turnover. Or their annual revenue. So for a Google or an Apple, that's going to get their attention because that's billions and billions of dollars that they would have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And probably as much as all of their profits. So when you think about it, any new regulation is going to have unintended consequences as people adjust their behavior to accommodate the regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And on the face of it, regulators expect you to just you know, read the regulation and contact your attorney and figure out what you have to do to be in compliance. And if you're going down that path, what you have to do is, first of all, you have to transparently communicate with all of your users, everybody that you take data from, what you're doing with that data. So now you have to have a statement on your website that says, I need your email address because I'm going to periodically send you a newsletter. Click yes. Then the question is, okay, if it's an app I just downloaded, now you have to tell me what you're going to do with the GPS data that you're collecting from my phone. Or, you know, if it's a medical app, what are you doing with the heartbeat data or the, you know, exercise data that I'm allowing this app to see?
Huh.
So you have to communicate effectively what you're doing with the data. And this is going to put an end to those business models where people offer free software to, you know, you download and, yeah, they force ads at you, but they're also collecting all the data they possibly can in the with the thought of in the future, if they collect data on millions of people, it'll be really valuable and they can sell it.
Uh-huh.
And that business model isn't going to work under GDPR.
Well, that's what we just said that with Cambridge Analytica, right? That was the business model there.
Well, Cambridge Analytica used some algorithms from a professor in Cambridge, no relation because of the name, I guess, and then an app that would go, you know, once people got the app, then it would start sucking in all this information that helped classify what you were prone to respond to. And then, of course, they fed you Facebook pages and ads that attempted to change the Brexit voting. And, of course, the elections here in the U.S. So, yeah, that would be a great example of a company that's going to fall afoul of GDPR because they won't be able to do that kind of activity.
Hmm. Well, I think a little company like mine, I know I have some European viewers, readers, because I look at the data from time to time, but it's a pretty small number. So I think I'm going to take the chance that I won't get the 20 million euro fine.
Yeah, and you're probably perfectly safe. I'm not advising you as your attorney because I'm not an attorney.
That's it.
And I think, you know, there are millions of small organizations like you that they're not going to go after, right? They're going to look at you know, people that are pretty egregious violations and go after them. But one of your options would be to start taking the EU residents off of your list and you know, emailing them and saying, I'm sorry because of GDPR, because I can't comply with all the security requirements. I can't hire a full-time data protection officer, which is one of the requirements.
Wow.
I'm just going to not have EU citizens or residents in my database anymore.
Well, you can't always
purge your database.
Well, you can't always tell that from the email address where they're located. I mean, they could be using Gmail for all you know, right? Or you know, some sort of mail service that's pretty universal. So, I guess you could make that argument.
And on your sign up form, you could say, "Are you an EU citizen? Click here." And then, as soon as they do, you just say, "Sorry." You can't sign up.
Don't continue.
And that's one of my, I actually predicted in December that one of the unintended consequences of this massive regulation would be that companies outside of the EU would stop allowing EU residents to use their service. So apps in particular on your phone, you wouldn't be able to download them because it's easier to do geolocation on a cell phone.
Right.
And sure enough, that's already started to happen. I've seen 8 so far. Yeah, there's even a company that offers to do that for you. Just they'll sell you some JavaScript you can put on your website that will block access from the EU from using geolocation. Obviously, it's easy to get around.
Right.
But that's just the beginning of it's a continuation of what I call digital mercantilism.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, when the internet came about, we were all excited because it was going to be this meeting place for the world's populace, and there'd be no boundaries, no barriers to communicating, and that's slowly being eroded. And a lot of it because of, you know, the legal jurisdictions where each country feels they have the right to spy on either their own citizens or other citizens.
Or both.
As the case in the U.S.
Yes.
Or both. And then share information with somebody who can spy on your citizens, like the U.S. seems to do with the U.K. and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so that immediately started this suspicion of Amazon and Cisco and some of the security vendors that, hey, they're working with the NSA, so let's not do business with them, or let's not allow them to collect their information. If they so force them to start building data centers in the EU so that people could store, you know, log data and things like that in those jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the EU is not alone. There's 111 countries around the world that have similar data protection regulations.
Wow, it's going to be so the internet will just see if you're in the U.S., you're just going to broadcast to the U.S. and not the rest of the world because of all these regulations, right?
Yeah, if you don't want to fall afoul of them. Now, mind you, no other country has jurisdiction in the U.S., right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not at risk of those fines, for instance. But if you were opening an office in Europe sometime in the future, they could come at you then and say, hey, now that you're here.
Ah, we've got you, yes.
What
about traveling? If I show my passport when I land in Europe and they go, oh, my God, he's one of those offenders. He has three European clients that aren't going to grab me and put me in jail, are they?
Nope, you're good.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Yep.
All right, so let's catch up on a few other things. Your buddy Eugene Kaspersky, he was is he doing business with the U.S. government anymore? Is that completely – has he been – his software been completely eliminated?
I don't think it's been completely eliminated. I think there's still pockets of it within the government. It's basically now a recommendation from the intelligence community not to use it.
Mm-hmm.
He had a very small team of essentially two salespeople in D.C., at least – the last time I met them,
mm-hmm.
and they have moved on. So he shut down any efforts to try and sell
mm-hmm.
in the U.S. But he's, he's still pushing forward, trying to fight it, and wants to talk to Congress and, basically testify. And as he has to, right? He does almost $1 billion in revenue globally, and he has to defend his company. And I think, so far, from everything we've seen, right, there's no evidence that Kaspersky's software is used as spyware. Zero. So it's just allegations.
Well, he is a former FSB agent, right? So.
Yeah, but nowadays half the security companies in the U.S. are former NSA people.
That's
so
true.
Start
pointing fingers.
Brand
yes.
them as being evil.
Not evil, just former spooks, right? So
yeah, former spooks.
Okay.
And they're not even spooks, they're just analysts or something, as Kaspersky was a cryptography guy. That doesn't make him a spook.
That's true, yes. We only got about a minute left. Now, I know you're coming out with a new book. You had There Will Be Cyber War that came out a couple of years ago, and what's your latest one that's coming out and when?
Actually, so I've got a book called Cloud Transformation, and it's coming out end of June. So you'll be able to get it then. And it's more of an industry analyst book.
Mm-hmm.
And I interviewed a dozen or so CIOs and CTOs at really big companies and got their stories and then built it into this book on how enterprises are moving to cloud computing as their IT infrastructure. And the tenet is that the internet is now the new corporate network, and the cloud is the new data center.
Huh. And it'll be available on Amazon, no doubt?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's Richard Steenen, founder of IT Harvest. As a disclaimer, him and I also wrote a cybercrime thriller together, and we've been working together since your days when you did RustNet, so long, long background there. And if you want to find out more, you can find him at itharvest.com. Okay. Thanks, Richard, very much. This is Mike Brennan on M2 TechCast, and we're on the Podcast Detroit Network.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
I'm back. Now, Matt is on vacation. Lucky him. But we have in the studio one of our regulars, Tim Brichet, director of the Engage Forum. Blip. I'll tell you, it's been one of those days, you know. Director of the Engage Program at Ed Forum.
Yay,
speak,
we got it right.
Slowly.
Yay,
and
awesome.
Enunciate. Okay, good. And with you, I'm horrible at names. I'm just not.
Let's try.
All right, it's Rashna Govani.
Correct.
All right.
Yes. Two for two.
Yeah, well, not. That's amazing I can do that because normally I butcher everybody's name. Founder and CEO of Food Stand. I'm going to let Timber explain, or you explain, actually, what Food Stand is.
So Food Stand, well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here on this sunny Monday. So Food Stand is a healthy eating behavior change program, and it's designed to help people turn healthy eating into an everyday habit so they can push diet-related disease out of the way. It is a very big problem in this country and around the world, and what and how we eat is the biggest contributor to a lot of the health problems we see in this country, and our goal is to help start, you know, changing that trend in the better direction.
And I assume you're in some way participating with something that Timber's doing. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm one of the participants in the masterclass put on by Inforum.
Just go ahead. Started. Give us that. I know you love that statistic. It's like Matt's always asked the question, are you hiring? In your case, what is your statistic for your class?
They're amazing. Actually, I just sent a report in last week. So these are hot off the presses. So the Engage Masterclass, which is Inform's strategy to position Michigan as the Midwest hub for high-growth women entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
With our masterclass, it's actually working with emerging second-stage women entrepreneurs to help them get to that next level over the course of 8 months. And since we started this program in 2012, we've had 101 women complete the program. They've started 42 brand new companies in addition to the 56 that they've already come in with that had been started. 385 jobs have been created. 35 patents have been issued. And they have gone on to raise follow-on funding in the amount of $44.2 million in capital and $13 million in government contracts.
Wow.
So some pretty amazing women have been involved in the program.
And you're in the middle of the 2018 cohort right now, right?
We are. We are pretty much right in the middle of it. And it's just been amazing.
Okay.
As you know, we've had three of the entrepreneurs already on this year.
Yes, that's true. And it's very interesting. Companies I would have never thought of starting on, you know, or even thought about much. You know, the people are just coming off with all sorts of crazy stuff, but it works.
They are. That's why this is so amazing. So Food Stand is this amazing app, as we're seeing a lot of apps these days, but hers is really very different. It's not just the challenge, but it's actually helping to build those good habits through repetition and, you know, just doing the things we do normally. So it's very simple tracking on your mobile phone. In fact, I just had mine up to take a peek at it myself because I'm involved in a couple challenges that I'm succeeding at. I completely gave up soda a few years ago, and I have to tell you what a difference it made in my life. I drank water and wine. That's about all I drink. And it makes a
Hopefully
difference.
Not together, though, right?
You
don't
have
water
to hydrate.
Your wine.
You have
know?
To hydrate.
Okay, all right.
So, and considering the healthy habits being a lifestyle, and we know that we've heard about the blue zones throughout the world of people who are completely doing it right. But think about in full-time workers who are overweight right now, in the world, actually, United States is a statistic, correct? Mm-hmm. So in the United States, full-time workers who are overweight or obese, and we know That's close. They have lots of other chronic problems, mm-hmm. and they end up costing employers $153 billion in lost productivity each year.
Huh.
Isn't that amazing? And the wellness programs that we're seeing now, like Food Stand, are actually giving a $3 to $4 return on investment to the employers for every dollar they invest. So it just makes sense. And it's also increasing then the bottom line for these companies, too.
Exactly.
So Food Stand is also a member of an organization called True Health Initiative. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Rachna?
Sure. So the True Health Initiative was started by a fellow named Dr. David Katz, who's basically like the chief of lifestyle medicine. At least that's how I interpret him. So when we think about lifestyle medicine, it's really about how can we essentially what the term is. How do we build a lifestyle that promotes optimal health long term? So Dr. David Katz brought together a number of, I think it's upwards of 100 physicians, registered dietitians, nutritionists, and other public health leaders to basically form a coalition, which is that True Health Initiative, to determine what we can do with the health information or the studies that come out that that could say, you know, coffee is good for you or bad for you. How do we make sense of all the information that's out there, and how do we put out a unified message that makes it clear to the individual what is actually healthy? As an organizational member of the True Health Initiative, Food Stand really takes a lot of those lessons and implements them in our program. So not only do you sort of like learn what is healthy and what isn't healthy for you based on 200 people's opinions, 200 professionals' opinions, but we help you turn that into a habit into your daily life.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It makes it a lot easier, doesn't it?
Indeed.
So how did you originally come up with the concept for Food Stand?
So a lot of the early inspiration from Food Stand came from two different places. So one is from my own personal family experience with diet-related disease. Every family has their own story. I had my own. And what I realized from that was that it wasn't just, you know, giving somebody information about what is healthy and what isn't healthy. It's translating that information into action into their daily life. And that's where there was always a breakdown for, you know, people in my family, my friends. And that really sparked me to think a little bit more deeply about what's wrong with what is in the market. So the second thing that drove us to build Food Stand and design it the way that we did was actually going out, you know, on that journey with myself, with my family members, with my friends, using the stuff that's out there, whether it's a calorie counting app to a program that you go in person to some sort of fad diet. All these programs were all rooted in kind of old science that if you changed everything at once for 10 days, you'd be cured. And we know that just isn't true. I think The Biggest Loser is probably the best example of that, where pretty much everybody gained all the way back, if not more, when they participated in a program that was so extreme. So our goal was to identify everything that was wrong with what's out there, why there are so many quote unquote solutions, but we still have a problem, and figure out how we can solve the root cause of the problem. And what we discovered was that, you know, healthy eating habits is really the crux of what we need to fix. But how we do that, how we turn that into long term change, really needed to be flipped on its head. And that's how we came up with the concept for Food Stand.
That's great. So for a female in tech, I know there are some challenges. What you're doing is amazing. And, you know, it's health related. So I'm sure you, as a woman in tech, are actually working with a lot more women than some women in tech are. But what's your challenge been with being a woman in tech, founding a company?
This is a loaded question. So I'd like to think of this as a not only just a challenge, but an opportunity to really elevate, I think, the uniqueness of female entrepreneurs. So one thing that is always that always comes up in conversation is the fundraising experience, right? What we do know is that the amount of VC money going to female entrepreneurs is so incredibly small. And that's part of that is because there just aren't as many of us out there, but we know that it's disproportionately disadvantaging. We have a disadvantage. So just the idea that we need to constantly be pitching to people who don't look and act like us is a challenge. I think one of the things that we've seen, especially with Inforum and other groups that are out there advocating for female entrepreneurs, is that the more money that exists on the other side of the table that's being controlled by women, the better off women will be. And we're fortunate to have one of our investors is Pipeline Angels. They are a network of female angel investors who invest in females, like that kind of infrastructure is required for us to really succeed. So fundraising, definitely a big challenge. I think the second thing is that, and I'm speaking as a new mom who was a newborn at home, the way you run a startup as a mom is different than the way you run a startup as a 22-year-old who doesn't have any other kind of familial responsibilities. I actually think that running a startup and having a baby are one in the same in terms of the skills required to be successful. And I'm kind of better at both because I'm doing both at the same time. But convincing somebody who hasn't seen that in practice is definitely a challenge, and making them realize that, you know, I'm actually way more efficient than somebody who doesn't have a child and who knows how to who's forced to time manage the way that I am.
Yeah, 100%. They always say, if you need something done, give it to a busy person. So you have two babies.
Yes, exactly. Food Stand was my first baby.
Absolutely. So those are the challenges you've seen as a woman in tech. With your company, what stage of growth would you say it's in today?
We're a seed stage company. So we've raised funding. We have a product in market, but we're at the precipice of growth, where we are kind of out there exploring the best way to sell our programs to more people.
That's great. So mm-hmm. you're actively looking for capital now?
Always.
As all entrepreneurs.
Yes,
that's a great
exactly.
answer. And we love that. So are there any recommendations you could give to other female entrepreneurs out there about how, you know, if they have an idea, how to go about it, you know, how to get started?
So I have a couple of very, very important things that I've learned. The first one is you don't need anybody to test your idea. So don't put it on the back burner because you don't have a tech person, because you don't have the skills. There's always a way to prototype and test your idea in the most rudimentary way. So don't be afraid to start. The second is to find a mentor as quickly as possible, whether it's somebody who's in the industry that you're interested in or somebody who just has done a number of things that you haven't done before that is female. Finding somebody to model off of has been quite helpful for me and helpful for a lot of other female entrepreneurs that I know. And then I think the third important thing, the other piece of advice that I've been given by a number of people is be very comfortable being uncomfortable. Anything that an entrepreneur does is hard and is probably unknown before you try it, and that's okay. You always want to be failing forward.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say your company's next big milestone will be since you're in growth stage and looking for funding?
Yeah, so our next big milestone is basically building out our sales infrastructure. So we already have revenue, we already have customers, and now we're in the process of refining that process. So it's really just a well-oiled machine. And so that's what we're working towards next.
That's terrific.
Did you lose your train of thought?
I totally lost my train of thought there because it's very exciting. So a little funding and, you know, some people. So
yeah.
Are you hiring? And if
we
so,
will
what are you hiring
the
for?
Question.
Yes. So as soon as we raise some additional funding, we do have plans to hire at least three additional people based in Michigan. We're looking for business development talent. So somebody who really understands the problem and delivers the message appropriately to our partners. We don't think of them as sort of salespeople. It's not that type of engagement, but somebody who's really out there to think about the business with us. And then additionally, we will be looking for a marketing analyst to help us grow our content that we put out there. We have a ton of education. We need to get it to the world. And then finally, our last hire for this year is going to be an additional engineer. So we've built the entire product with my CTO. It's one person. He's sort of a unicorn in terms of technology development, but he definitely can't do it all by himself. So we will be expanding on the engineering side.
Okay.
So if somebody wanted to get in touch with you to find out more about the product, and now are individuals, I know you're working with a lot of companies, mm-hmm. but are individuals able to join
absolutely.
The food stand
absolutely.
Revolution?
Yes, absolutely. So we have members in over 80 countries who are participating in our challenges. So you can download the Food Stand app for free. Just search Food Stand in the iTunes or Google Play Store. This is you as an individual participating in our challenges. If you are an organization who wants to bring our challenges to your office, to your school, to your community group, you can email us at team@thefoodstand.com and somebody from our team will follow up and set up a demo for you.
That's terrific. And that's where people would also find, where would people find out about the jobs that will soon be coming and learn more about the company?
You can find out more at thefoodstand.com.
Okay. And that is Rashna Govani.
Perfect.
Got it right twice. Whoa. Founder and CEO of Food Stand. And she was interviewed by Tim Bruchet, the director of Engage at Inform, And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast on the Podcast Detroit Network, and we'll be right back with segment four.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
We're live, yes. Hey, it's Mike Brennan, and we're on M Squared TechCast, and we have with us, calling in from Ann Arbor all the way over there, David Brophy, who is, many hats at the U of M. He's a professor there at the business school, but what we're talking to him about today is he's the creator of the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium, which this year will be held on May 15th and 16th at the Eagle Crest Conference Center. And this is the 35th anniversary of the show. You must have started that when you were, like, 20 years old, right, David?
I was 13.
13, actually. Okay, yeah. I knew you were just 50 now. So, well, good. I have covered this going all the way back to my Free Press days. I don't know what number I started at, but it might have even been single digits back then. But
yeah.
It's one heck of a shoe, right?
I think so. I thought it would last 2 years, you know, because it made a lot of sense at the start, and I figured everybody would catch on, and we'd have no problems with funding young and growing companies in Michigan. But lo and behold, it's actually 37th year, not 35th. So it's been a long time, but we've put a lot of companies through there, helped a lot of companies, and I think played a role in increasing the interest of investors in this kind of company, because we needed a kind of a successor to the late great auto business that we had here. So
the late great auto business, well, it still is. It's just, it's
no, not, no, no. It is, and it. But the interesting thing is that the two elements are coming together, because the auto business is now way more electronic and
digitized,
online,
yes.
Digital, yeah,
yes, very
than it
digital,
ever
right.
was. So it's a happy, happy coincidence of both fields.
All right. Now, last year you teamed up with the Colder Investment Forum. Are you doing that again this year?
No, they're going a different direction with their program. They're focusing on child care in Asia and taking care of families over there. And so they've kind of turned away from investing in tech companies here in the U.S.
So. Ah, okay. So I think you can still sign up to attend. And do you take walk-ups as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, if we didn't have walk-ups, we wouldn't have the big crowd that we have. People are, they think about it kind of right up to the last minute, and then they decide there's no better place to be if they're interested in business building.
Yeah, absolutely. So typically you draw 500 or so folks, right? And these are not just,
yes.
People walking in off the street. These are, in most cases, these are private equity finance people, other sorts of high-level business people, right?
Yeah, I mean, investors from, say, the Midwest or the either coast who have an interest in Michigan, I think figure that that's the best place. It's the best single place per year to show up and meet the people who are most tuned into this business here, because everybody wants a connection and everybody wants a kind of a simple connection, to be kind of represented here and to get information. So we draw pretty well. Our keynote this year is the guy who runs Intel Capital, Wendell Brooks, and he's interested because we've got great universities here that have great electrical engineering and computer science departments and so on, getting Intel Capital to pay attention to us is non-trivial. Every year, as you know, since you've been here that many times, I always bring some pretty important person from the venture capital business in other markets to our market, just to make sure that everybody here gets to meet these people they might not otherwise meet, and also to expose what we've got here to investors from other parts of the country. And I think that's paid off. We've got a lot of investors who invest in Michigan funds now, Michigan firms.
And a lot of these folks that come to the event are your former, they're your alumni, your former students, right?
True enough, yeah, personal alumni from my class. And we've populated proportionally a very large portion of the venture capital business and the entrepreneurship business as well, you know, companies that have formed funds and so on.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been doing for a long time. He's just sort of pounding on that aspect of what we do at the business school.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I know originally you had this when it was a smaller conference and before they did all the construction at the business school. You had it right there. But you've been out at Eagle Crest now for, I'm guessing, what, 10 years? Close to 10 years?
Yeah. It's somewhere around there. I don't know. But it's the only suitable place. I've always been surprised that we didn't have one in Ann Arbor. We don't have one yet, put it that way.
Right.
Because, you know, it's got a golf course. It's got hotel rooms. It's got great facilities. Exactly what we need for a conference like this. So we're very happy there.
And it's just outside of, 10 miles outside of Ann Arbor, even if that, I'm not sure if it's that far, right?
It's probably not that far. It's proximate, you know, to the airport for those people that want to fly in and so on.
Right.
And it's just a nice place, you know, and there's no traffic and there's great parking and the food's good. So,
yeah. It can't beat all that stuff, right?
It can't beat all of that, no.
Yeah, and then all that great networking as well, and not to mention that there's going to be... Is it 35 companies pitching? I'm trying to remember the number.
Yeah, I think we have 37 this
37.
Time, but it's always 35 to 40, you know, and it's purely a function of how well our market's working here and how many rising companies we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while we do encourage early stage companies, we're always looking to scale our companies and help them grow. Larger and do it faster
now,
so that, you know, they qualify and bring more jobs and more production and commercialize the technology that we've got here. We're so long in technology and, you know, we've got to do a better job of converting that technology into profitable companies that grow and improve our economy.
Do you have any idea or any sort of basic ballpark figures on how many companies have received how much investment over the years? Have you ever tracked that down?
It's almost 1,500 companies now, and I'd say $2 billion, something like that.
Wow.
You know, eventually, I mean, there probably won't be any checks written that day. You know very well, Mike, that the basic thing that you're pitching for is the next meeting with a fund, you know,
right.
Because that process takes a little time. But the key thing is getting in front of them and kind of being discovered and progressing in that respect. And we do a pretty efficient job of that and give good opportunities. You've been there so many times. You have seen the people, you know, huddled at tables talking business, and that's a great sight for me to see, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how are these companies selected? Are you involved in that, or is it a separate committee?
Well, I used to do it all, but my mantra always has been that this program belongs to the community, you know, and you should get involved in it. And so basically now we open it up to the investment community here to send companies to us, you know, as they see them and as they believe that they're of value. And then, of course, we put a public notice out. So, you know, anybody can apply pretty much. And then we have a sort of a sorting process, because we have to be aware of what the investors want, because just as we couldn't run the program without companies, we can't run the program without investors. And so you've got to hit a sort of a quality level every year. There's got to be companies making presentations that investors will be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, you just can't, you can't let everybody in. You know, there are standards that you got to meet. So
yeah,
we really like companies that have gotten some traction, you know, mm-hmm. that have raised a little bit of money, so they're not afraid of Friday payday.
Right.
And who are offering, you know, kind of an established platform to investors.
And it's not just Michigan companies. You reach out beyond sort of the upper Great Lakes area, kind of, or is it even further than that?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, a couple of reasons for that. We need to have the company, you know, at a high quality. And opening it up to the Midwest, let's say, and we've had them from either coast as well.
Mm-hmm.
But when a company from any of those places wants to participate, and we put them in the stack along with everybody else, it's kind of a meritocracy, you know, we try to pick the best ones. And if the best one is from Minnesota, or dare I say Ohio.
No,
you know,
you can't say that.
Then they're going to make the cut. And if somebody from Michigan doesn't like it, then build a better company, you know?
There you go. Yes. Well, good.
Yeah.
And then there's also, I haven't heard much about it, but typically what happens is the Michigan Venture Capital Association has a little soiree, as it were, during this event. Is that going on again this year?
Sure. And it's good. This is all of a piece, you know? We support them. They are the investment, you know, each member is an investor that comes along and takes part in our program. And without that, we don't have a program, and we reciprocate, you know, we help them. So the key to Michigan advancing in this business is co-creation and collaboration, you know, help each other, work together, and put out the best products and encourage investors to come here and encourage our own investors. If our own investors would dig a little deeper, our institutional investors, and pay attention to what's going on in our market, we might be a bigger market, might be growing faster and so on. But many of the institutional investors are still a little gun-shy. Maybe they think the old economy is coming back, or maybe they think China is less risky than Washtenaw County. I don't know.
Yeah, hard to say. Yes. How do these people think? What are some of the trends over the years? Clearly, in the beginning, it wasn't so heavily focused on technology as it is now, right?
Well, yeah, it's true. And we don't have anything against non-technology companies, you know, obviously. But, you know, Domino's made their first appearance here many, many years ago. And so we've had a lot of what you call consumer goods companies. And we do get a steady stream from, you know, the med school, the engineering school, different universities, Wayne. In my commercialization class that I run here, we now have a team from Michigan Tech. Going to participate. We got a team from Western Michigan that wants to participate. And so I'm encouraging that. And hopefully we'll get, you know, Michigan State and Wayne and others involved in that class, which becomes kind of a forerunner of the symposium. So I'm trying to be sort of full service here and training an inventory for inclusion in the symposium.
But certainly none of those students from that state south of us, right? We don't allow them to come in, do we?
Well, of course, the deep, dark secret is that's where I come from. So,
I know. I didn't want to bring that up, that you are one of those graduates from that said school. But
I'm here as a missionary, Mike. You know that.
Yes.
But I'm afraid I went native a long time ago.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad we converted you. So
Now
we got
for most days of the year, put it that way.
Yeah, right, right. Except when Ohio State hockey plays Michigan, then I tend to think you probably lean with Ohio State, right?
I didn't say that. I was actually thinking of Christmas Day when I'm everybody's friend, you know.
Oh, so there you go. Okay. So we got them all excited, David. They want to come to attend this event. What's that website where they sign up so they can do so?
That's a good question, but why don't you aim it at Mary Nixon, whatever website you have from her or email you have from her.
Well, it's Michigan GP Growth Capital, GCP. No, whatever. We'll figure this out. Yes, Michigan Growth Capital Symposium. Just Google it, darn it all. You know, you'll get a better way that way. I can't remember the darn thing. And you can still walk up. It's at the Eagle Crest. It starts at midday on the 15th, and then there's a full day on the 16th. It's a great event. I've attended it personally at least 20 times or so, and I highly recommend it.
Well, thanks for inviting me to be on your show, and congratulations on sustaining it for a long time. I know you're the consummate professional here in Michigan.
Oh, well,
and
thank you.
You can close your ears on this one if you wish, but you've been the most consistent supporter of not only the symposium, but of the whole notion of stimulating and sustaining technological innovation in Michigan. So
thank you, David. Too kind. So, all right. Well, that smooth talking guy is David
there
Brophy.
You go.
We call
Did I
him
sell a ticket?
Yeah, the big Kahuna. Also, he's been called.
True enough.
He's a professor at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business and founder of the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium. And gosh, as I say, Google that because we can't remember what the darn website address is. So.
Yeah, but it determines how bad you want to go to it, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So, I want to thank you for joining us today on M Squared TechCast, and thank you very much, David. And we are on the Podcast Detroit Network. We'll see you next week.
Very good, Mike. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.